And good morning. Welcome to the second hour of Focus, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson is the producer. Jason Croft at the controls this hour. Kyle Mabry was on for hour number one. In this hour of the show, we'll be inviting your questions about skin. Every once in a while on this program, we have a dermatologist on the show. We've had some of the folks who practice in our area. We're very happy to welcome back here to the show Ellen Jacobson. She is a dermatologist with a practice in Urbana. And it's been a while since she's been here, but she's been a guest on the program before. And we'll try to do the basic thing that we do whenever we have somebody here in the summertime, which is to remind people of why it is important to wear sunscreen. And so we talk a little bit about skin cancer. So we'll do that. But we are open to whatever sorts of skin care questions that you have, as long as people do keep in mind that diagnosing over the phone when you can't see someone is difficult. So we do these shows that we hope that they're good information for you, and you may need to pursue whatever questions you have with someone who can see you. But this is a good place you can start. Ask basic questions, and the doctor will do her best to help you out. So with all of that, I'll give the phone numbers. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. So that's for the phones. And if you'd like to send a question by email, you may do that as well. That's will-talk. Will-talk. At WILL.edu. Is that right? Did I do that right? I don't know. Anyway, thanks very much for being here. I appreciate you being here.
Glad to be here with you.
And it's probably good, you know, whenever we try to do, generally we do, sometimes we do these things in the summer, we do them in the winter, and the issues are a little bit different depending on the season. But I guess the whole question of sun exposure never really goes away. That's as much of an issue any old time. And we do certainly need to remind people that, you know, you're going to be outside. This is something you should think about.
Yes, and to think about it, I usually recommend that my patients think about it right about the same time they brush their teeth in the morning and just go ahead and apply their sunblock at that point, because then it's there. And if you've put on your 30 SPF, you will be protected for most people through the most part of the big sun hours. And so that's my big advice, is to just do it, not when you think you're going to need it, but just to always do it, and then it will be there if you do need it.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the things that we're always told about to sunscreen is that even if people do, if you say to people, do you ever use sunscreen? They say, well, yeah. And then you say, well, how often do you do it? And do you put on enough? And assuming that, say, maybe you put it on in the morning. So do you need to reapply it later on?
Well, I think that, you know, I try to make it as simple as possible for my patients. So I say to use a 30 or above. And in fact, I personally use a 50 because more is better than less. And it lasts longer, because the whole concept of the SPF, or sun protection factor, is based on how long it would take you to burn if you didn't have anything on versus how long it takes you to burn with the sunblock on. And since many of the sunblocks are, they're both physical and chemical in the way that they work. So if you're using a 50, it's going to give you 50 times as much protection. If you would burn in 10 minutes, it's going to give you 500 minutes of protection. And so that gets you through the main part of the sun, you know, the big sun from 10 to 4. I heard a really great thing that if your shadow is shorter than you are, you need to be seeking sun protection. So longer shadows are morning and evening. Shorter shadows are middle of the day. But the thing that I super need to stress here is that sunblock is not it by itself. You know, the main thing that you need to be doing, especially if you're a man with very little hair or someone who has collected significant sun exposure, is the actual physical blockade from the sun, of a hat, of sunglasses, of an umbrella, of trees over your head, of these wonderful sun protective clothings that you can get now that are made by Columbia and Solumbra, that are actually woven into the fiber, a tremendous amount of sun protection, a 40 or a 50 of sun protection. So the sunblock is not it alone. And in fact, it can almost worsen things if you think, oh, well, I'm not going to burn out here, and you just stay out for an extended period of time, you're still going to collect a lot of ultraviolet damage. And that's what leads to both wrinkling and skin cancer down the road.
Okay. Well, we have a caller. We'll get them in right away. And this is someone who is in Lafayette, and it's our toll-free line, line four. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. What causes the skin, especially on hands and wrists, to develop itchy red patches that come and go?
Well, typically on the backs of the hands, are you saying?
Yes.
And is it only on the hands? Is it anyplace else on the body?
It's mostly on the hands and wrists.
Is it in any particular season?
Seems to be now in the last few weeks.
Okay, and not during the wintertime?
No, not so much.
Okay. Well, there are several things that can happen. A main thing that happens to the skin on the back of the hands, which is in fact somewhat more fragile than the skin on the palm of the hands because it has less thickness to the keratin, which is pretty protective, are exposures. So if you've been out in the yard and you've been using chemicals and you've been having contact with different plants, you can get itchy red patches from that, or from poison ivy, for instance. But there is an interesting condition that's called polymorphous light eruption, which polymorphous means many shaped. It can be blisters, it can be red patches, it can be just thickenings that are very itchy. And it seems to come in areas for the first, maybe 20 or 20 days of sun exposure in people who are susceptible. Like most things in medicine, we have really no idea where it comes from or why it happens, but it is a susceptibility issue in certain people. Have you had this for many years, or is it a new problem?
It seems to be recent and getting worse.
Okay, and is it blisters or kind of thick red scaly patches?
Just red scaly.
Okay, and do any of those things apply to you in terms of contactants with chemicals and et cetera you've been using?
No chemicals.
Okay, so nothing, no yard work at all?
No.
Okay. Well, I can't 100% tell you what's going on. I can tell you that if they're bothering you, I would mostly be very nice to them. I would use Vaseline. I would use Cetaphil products to wash. I would not scrub them. And I would just get some over-the-counter hydrocortisone and see what that does for them.
I've been nursing them with hydrocortisone, yes.
And does that seem to give them a little relief?
That gives temporary relief.
Yeah. So it's a little odd to have only, you know, this one area if it was, you know, more of an eczema process. Are there any new medications that you've started, and have you had any sun exposure? Are you mostly inside?
I'm mostly inside.
Okay. And did you go through a period where you were washing your hands all the time?
No.
Okay.
I've been using lotion mostly with vitamin E, I was told. But you say that Vaseline, the oil base, is better?
Yeah, it's sort of the purest. Anytime you make a lotion out of something, you've used, you know, some different emulsifiers, which are chemically based and which can sometimes cause trouble in and of themselves. People can develop contactant dermatitis at any point in their lives, really, to anything. The only other thing that comes to mind is, have you had any exposure with little animals or cats or dogs?
No, none of those.
None of those. Hamsters? Okay, so, you know, a fungal infection can also be kind of scaly and red and particularly on your hands. So, and I'm going to have to say, there are some systemic conditions, diseases that can present with various kinds of red places on the hands. So I think getting in, you know, to see a physician if they're not getting significantly better and possibly getting a biopsy is not a bad idea. So see how your hydrocortisone and Vaseline does for a little while. You get some of those cotton gloves maybe to wear at night that are just protective and keep the medicine on. And if you haven't, within 4 or 5 weeks, gotten yourself to a really improved situation, get in and see someone.
All right. Well, thank you, ma'am.
Okay,
all right. Thank you. Other calls are certainly welcome. We're talking this morning about skin and skin care. And our guest for the show is Dr. Ellen Jacobson. She's a dermatologist with practice in Urbana. And you just give us a call, and she'll do her best to answer your question. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Just, I appreciate your comments about it's for people to make putting on sunscreen just a regular part of your routine so that you will just do it, and then you don't have to think about it. You have to think, oh, I'm going outside. I have to do that now. I would just really struck, particularly because it seems that we complain a lot about or we worry about adolescents and their sun exposure. This coming from the American Academy of Dermatology, that they're concerned about men older than 50. They say they have an increased risk of developing melanoma, and they did a survey and they found that when outside, less than a third of men say that they always protect their skin. So maybe they're doing it sometimes and sometimes not. And certainly it seems that men don't. Women are doing a better job of thinking about this than men are.
Absolutely. And, you know, these little things that you know, there are things that the way that people act that you have no idea that, you know, why they would be that way. But one thing that I've noticed is a line that has made a big impression on many of my male patients is that, you know, you actually have skin on under your ears and on the back of your neck also. Because, you know, some people say, well, it confounds me constantly. It's like, well, I put it on my nose every morning, or I put it on my right ear, whether I need to or not. And so this concept that we have a back of a neck, you know, and on the area under the ears, we take off massive numbers of skin cancers in those areas all the time. And so, and the backs of the hands also, of course. And so, you know, remembering that the skin, that the exposure is the issue. Remembering that a ball cap really only protects your forehead and the upper bridge of your nose. It does not protect the sides of your face. It does not protect your ears. And so actually sort of thinking through where you get sun, where you get light, isn't really important. Mm-hmm. And this man over 50 thing is huge, because the predominance of melanoma skin cancers, which are, of course, the skin cancers that can actually kill you if not found early enough, develop in places where people can't really see them. And in men, it's often on the upper back. And so I've now been in practice here for 12 years. And, you know, we have, you know, at least a melanoma twice a week that we're finding in patients who we've been taking care of. And I haven't taken new patients for almost 5 years. And so these are in existing patients who have developed, you know, this increased photo damage as time goes on, because your skin just gets less and less able to repair itself as time goes on, as all our organs do.
Yeah. You have to figure out a way to make it fashionable for men to wear hats again.
Well, I really have a big I tell people how much I fancy the way that they look as sort of the Australian bush guy, you know.
Yes.
And now with the one, the hat that goes all up on the sides but is actually flat. And there's this wonderful hat called a Tilly hat, which is made by an Australian company. And they cost $60 or $70, but they have like an insurance policy that comes with them almost, that if you lose it,
they'll give you another one.
Yeah. So they are really into helping us be sun protective. They float if they fall out of your boat. You can wear the little, you know, the neck thing down if you want to, tucked up if you think it doesn't look cool. You can wear it on a boat where it would be blowing off. It is such a great hat. And I have one, and it's like sometimes I get in the car and I don't even think, oh, I have to take this hat off. You know, it's that comfortable.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Go Tilly.
So what you want is a hat that has a brim that goes all the way around.
All the way around, and kind of gives you a couple inches, like at least 3 inches all the way around. It protects those ears and that neck.
Okay. To some other callers here. Champagne is next, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I have seborrheic dermatitis, and I've been kind of dealing with that for 5 years now. Currently, I have some topical medications that I use that seem to be effective at first and not so effective anymore. Who I've been seeing for dermatology doesn't want to go stronger because I'm still breastfeeding my baby. So I'm wondering if there's something that I can do. I kind of read about changing your diet to affect dermatitis or problems with the skin, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Okay. Yeah, seborrheic dermatitis is one of these things that I usually say almost everybody gets at some point in their life. So it's cradle cap when you're a little kid. A lot of people get it in their scalps when they're teenagers, when hormones are changing. A lot of people get it in their middle years, and lots of people get it when they get quite elderly. And it can vary in severity tremendously. I think of it as a multifactorial process. It seems to have something to do with a yeast form called Pityrosporum ovale in some people. In some people, it's kind of more irritant around the nose and the eyebrows. Where all do you have it?
It's mostly on the ears.
Like inside the ears or the little crack right where it attaches to your head?
Both.
Okay.
And then a little bit on the eyelids. And recently, just a little bit around the nose.
Okay. The eyelids or the eyebrows?
Eyelids.
Okay. Eyelids is a kind of a funny place in my thought for seborrheic dermatitis. Maybe more of an atopic eczema or a different kind of eczema usually affects the eyelids.
Okay.
Interestingly. And so can you... the medicines you're using, is there any steroid mixed in with them at all?
I'm not sure.
Okay, all right.
One's a Locoid.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Okay, so that's a fairly low potency steroid, yeah.
What is the other one? Desonide, maybe?
Okay, desonide, okay. And that's it? That's all you got?
Yes.
Okay, so then the only thing that's being dealt with by that particular medicine is... you know, sort of the redness and inflammation, and not at all any yeasty piece, if there is such a thing in your case. So, and how old is your babe, may I ask?
Almost a year.
Okay, so you're not primary at this point, right?
Right.
So that's fine. So what I would do is go ahead and pick up a little bit of Lotrimin over the counter,
okay,
which would take care of the yeast a little bit. And I would not use either your Locoid or your Desonide more than 3 times a week. Particularly on your eyelids, because both of them, you know, actually can cause cataracts through time.
Oh, okay.
I would make sure that nothing else besides maybe a little Vaseline is touching your eyelids. So
okay.
A little touch of Desonide. And I'm sorry to be confusing. My nurses hate it when I do this, but I would not. I'd also not particularly use the Lotrimin on your eyelids because I doubt that's a problem. Are you wearing any nail polish at all?
Do I wear nail polish?
Yeah.
Sometimes on my toenails.
Okay, all right. Because interestingly, nail polish is strongly associated, the use of it, with eczema on your eyelids. It's
really?
One of the things, yeah.
Okay.
Because there's some kind of a little bit of a chemically thing. Are you using any kind of biological organic creams or anything on your face or your ears?
I usually use just like Oil of Olay moisturizer in the morning and at night.
Okay.
And I wear makeup, and I've been trying not to use it on my eyelids.
Okay.
Know, my all-over powder.
And do the places on your ears, are they cracky and oozy, or are they just sitting there at itchy?
Well, they kind of go in phases.
Okay.
You know, if they'll disappear, and then they'll kind of come back cracky and oozy, and then kind of flaky once I apply the lotion.
So I would go ahead and, you know, your ears, you can use a little bit more of either the Locoid or the Desonide, but add in the Lotrimin as a secondary thing. And actually, if you get kind of a cracky, oozy place, right, you know, where your ear attaches to your head, there's often a little bit of secondary infection in that. And so I think I'd almost maybe pick up a triple antibiotic and use a little bit of that right in that particular location, too. So it could be you have a couple different things going on here that... I'll just make you slightly miserable.
Okay. The Lotrimin, can use it.
That one you can use fairly much willy-nilly. I mean, I wouldn't rub it all over your baby, but I would, you know, that's not going to cause any trouble for your nursing or anything else with your skin.
Okay.
So, yeah, I always treat this with a couple different things, and you really have just gotten the one. So a little Vaseline along the places where it gets more cracky and a little bit more open, a little bit of the triple antibiotic, and I say that knowing that the triple antibiotic has been the allergen of the year many times since 1980. So some people are sensitive to it, but not everybody is. And so you probably won't have trouble with that. And the Lotrimin is just the basic Lotrimin, you know, generic is great. And that's just an over-the-counter, really good anti-yeast medicine.
Okay. But you haven't really heard anything about...
Oh, diet. I'm sorry. So that's where we started here. Sorry.
No, okay.
Yeah. No, you know. I mean, and diet is like nearly impossible because, you know, it varies so much from day to day and moment to moment. And we've never been able to do the studies even with acne and diet. So I personally would not know what to eat less of to not have a rash on my eyebrows, on my eyelids. But I would not rub food on my eyelids.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank
you. Good luck.
Thank you for the call. We will go on, and we'll talk next with someone in Bourbonnais, and this is line number four. Hello.
Good morning. I appreciate you taking my call. My name is Pat. Doctor, you sound very knowledgeable. I was wondering if you have had any cases with people who have developed any parasites from Lake Michigan. And I was reading up that there's some instances where they have sometimes the water around the shore where it doesn't get a lot of circulation. And there's a, I think it's a type of flea or something that,
yeah,
that can get you around the ankles and stuff. And it seems like I caught some of that, and I had a real tough time getting rid of it. And I wonder if you've had any experience dealing with that type of situation.
There's a thing that's called actually sea bather's eruption. And it is caused by a little parasite that seems to hang out in sort of duck feces. And it's more pond than lake. But I've been in Lake Michigan a few times where it was like really slimy. And so,
right.
I mean,
because I'm almost sure that's where this stuff originated.
And you know, I would frankly not be sure whether it was like, you know, some kind of a toxic exposure to paper pulp, you know, leftover chemicals or actually something that was
a
parasite.
When I came back from the lake, my ankles were like really itchy.
Right.
And then I like scratched my side and it seemed like it was instantly, you know, affecting my side area as well.
Yeah,
and it
so
seems like it's taken me forever to.
So give me a timeline on this one. When were you in Lake Michigan?
This is like 2 years ago, and it seems like it's finally, you know, over the last probably 8 months, it's finally like seemed like it really went away.
So lots of times what people do when they develop something, and it would be very hard to go back, you know, historically and figure out what exactly got you. And like I said, if it was toxic, if it was parasitic, you know, the parasitic things, actually, most of the ones that you would get in Lake Michigan actually would affect you underneath your bathing suit rather than on your ankles. Okay?
I see.
So, but what happens very frequently with people is that they develop something that's red and itchy and respond to it by using lots of toxic methods, including excessive washing, to try to get it clean. And so they use lots of soap, lots of water, lots of, you know, lots of sometimes, I mean, people use gasoline, they use hydrogen peroxide, they use alcohol, they use all things that are really tissue toxic. And so their skin gets very abraded, very miserable, and then quite susceptible to developing a little secondary infection. So again, like I said earlier, I really believe in kindness to your skin as the first thing. So at this point, now you think that things are pretty much calmed down. What did you use any Cordate, or did you get any medicine from doctors for it?
Well, I actually, one doctor I went to was thinking it was like a scabies thing. And I put some lotion on, and on one spot it seemed like it healed like almost overnight, but then it didn't seem like it had any effect after that.
Okay. And so, again, scabies is incredibly itchy, but having it like mostly on your ankles and one side would be extremely unlikely. And you couldn't have gotten that at Lake Michigan unless...
Yeah, it was on both ankles, actually.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, ankles as opposed to scabies is typically on hands, around breasts, under armpits, and crotches, around belly buttons.
Right.
You know, those would be areas you would typically see it. And
usually, where you have tight contact with skin, with clothing.
Right. And where it's embarrassing to sit and itch, scratch, I mean. So... So at this point, you know, I think that you probably did get into something there, and you may have gotten a little bit of a secondary infection, which is why, you know, you had extra trouble with it. And I would say when you go to Lake Michigan next time, I would put on my really good physical sunblock, something nice and zinc-based to protect you. And I would even put a little Vaseline on that area that had been before I went in. You know, to protect it. And I find the same thing true like in hot tubs, you know, that hot tubs often have so much chlorine or bromine in them that they really, you know, make you incredibly itchy when you get out of them. And so I don't think this was probably a parasitic thing. I think it was probably contacted.
Else I was wondering about, too. You've heard that some of the ocean-going vessels that are using Lake Michigan, they dump their ballast.
Sure.
And they've actually had some, they've had some like saltwater animals from different parts of the world. And I noticed too with parasitic infection, it's so much more common around the equator.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering if there's not anything new that might have been introduced to the lake.
I don't think anything that was predominantly saltwater was going to be able to live in Lake Michigan, because really very little can live in Lake Michigan right now. So I think, I would think common is common and weird is weird. And you probably got some kind of a thing started and kept it going by overtreating. So good luck, and just be protective of the areas and wear your sunblock.
Yeah, I need to jump in here. I want to thank the caller. I would certainly welcome other folks if you have questions. You'd like to talk about skin and skincare with our guest, Dr. Ellen Jacobson. She's a dermatologist from Urbana. We'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, we listen back to an interview with Donna Summer. She's died of cancer at the age of 63. One of the best singers of the disco era, her hits included Bad Girls, Last Dance, Hot Stuff, and On the Radio. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you listening. We're here Monday through Friday from 10 until noon, and we have 10 different topics for you across the week. Monday morning at 10, Scott Spies will be here for a monthly show on home care. Also Monday in the 11 o'clock hour, the guest is Dr. Suzanne Troopin. She is an obstetrician and a gynecologist, and we talk with her every other month about women's health. Then Tuesday morning at 10, we will review current events in Burma. And there our guest will be Christina Fink. She is a professor of practice of international affairs at the George Washington University. And there'll be a lot of other things next week. If you'd like to check the schedule, go to the website, which is WILL.illinois.edu. And you can see what we're doing. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at Will Public Media, and also you can check us out on Facebook. In this hour of the show, we're talking about skin. And if you have skin care questions, where our guest is dermatologist Dr. Ellen Jacobson. You can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. I have a couple email questions here. We have someone who has some more questions about sunscreen who writes, "My wife watches several kids during the day, and she became overwhelmed with trying to find consistent reviews for a safe, waterproof sunscreen that is also environmentally friendly." Wondering if you have some recommendations on that, and also I think that this person is wondering about whether spray-on applications are as good as the traditional kind that you apply manually.
Yeah, this is a kind of a tough one. depends on, of course, the ages of the kids. Typically, physical sunblocks are less environmentally disastrous than chemical ones. but in many of the beauty spots of the world, they don't want you to be using chemical sunblocks and going into, you know, various lagoons and pools in Hawaii because of leaving both a film that can disrupt the the animals, you know, in the plankton, as well as just making a greasy film over the top of it. So, but if we're dealing in a yard in Champaign-Urbana, probably not going to be too much trouble with the environment. So I would aim for titanium dioxide and zinc oxide micronized as the main ingredients to use on little kids. And Tie screen products, TI screen, are particularly helpful for that. And Neutrogena has some that are strictly physical, but looking for the titanium products would be good. Spray-on products are nice and easy to do to try to catch children to put them on, but you will find that it is very hard to get them uniformly spread. So where you spray is going to be well protected, and where you kind of rub in around the edges is probably not. So I would say that a lotion that comes out of a squirt bottle that can be rubbed quickly in that's like greater than a 50 is probably the great best thing to use in that situation. And good for you for trying to take care of kids and protect them. And remember, the shirt is important. Even a T-shirt, however, is only about an SPF of 4. So you want to get a little sunblock on underneath that, too.
Okay. We also have a question here. Someone wants to know, can you speak to the difference between fungal infections in the finger versus paronychia? I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I have recurring slight discoloration on the nail along with inflamed skin under it. I ran a course of antibiotics that did not help much and currently are on their second week of using Lamisil.
Okay, so paronychia is actually the state of having inflammation around the nail. So it's usually where the cuticle attaches to the finger, as opposed to, so that's the paronychium.
Okay.
And it is particularly susceptible to all kinds of injury, including fungal injury, when particularly you lose the cuticle. So many patients who come in have no thought that they've actually lost a cuticle on certain fingers where they're having a chronic inflammatory process. But if you have redness around the edge, you know, look and see if you have a cuticle or if you have a hole in the cuticle where it's supposed to attach to the nail. So we always say, like, if you're going to get a pedicure or a manicure, don't let them mess with your cuticles. You can push them back gently, but mostly take good care of your cuticle because once it's gone, it's really hard to get back. So paronychia often comes in that situation. So all kinds of crud gets down into that area around your nail when you don't have a cuticle. It can be bacterial crud. It can be fungal crud. It can just be inflammatory crud. It can be soap. It can be all kinds of things. So almost always you need to, again, treat this in a multifactorial way. You need to use a topical a rub-on form of a steroid, which is anti-red, anti-itch, anti-inflammatory. Sometimes you need to use a topical antibiotic. Over-the-counter, it would be the same, you know, triple antibiotic or polysporin. Or you need to use something called mupirocin, which is a prescription antibiotic. And then sometimes there is a fungal aspect to this. But Lamisil is it's good by mouth if there's actually fungus that you're dealing with. But it's not even that common that it is a fungal problem. So working with somebody who actually can help diagnose the issue is really important. And I'm sorry you have this because I know it's really a nuisance. But make sure that the fungal infection is typically in the nail itself. The nail, it's thickened. It can be up off the nail bed. It can have funny colors. And then, you know, the paronychium, which is around the nail, is really a totally separate issue.
Okay. Well, again, hope that helps. We have a number of callers here. We'll try to get them all. And we'll start in right with Urbana and line one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I turned in a little bit late. Hope that you haven't already covered this. I have skin tags, not a few, but lots and lots of skin tags. Had them cut off and they come back. I also have, of course, a lot of brown patches, which are pretty typical of older people, but some of them do cause me a bit of trouble. Just wondered if there's, is there anything that can be done with skin tags other than have them cut off and Any other information you can give me?
Okay. Well, you are, I guess when I became a dermatologist, I didn't realize how much of my job every day was telling people they were getting older. And and I was working in California initially, and I can tell you that was even less popular in California than it is in Illinois. And so all of these are probably hereditary issues as well as, you know, just long-term being alive issues for you. And I don't have any magic, I'm afraid to say. You know, surgical removal of individual, they're called seborrheic keratoses, the kind of little greasy, scaly, you know, sometimes flesh tone, sometimes brown patches that many people get. You know, you usually get those from your mom and dad, and you have to love them for other stuff because you're probably not that happy with this part. And the skin tags, other than, you know, surgical removal, there really is not a lot to do. But there's very slick surgical removal that can be done with, you know, using a rub-on numbing medicine beforehand and clipping off bunches and bunches of them. You know, Medicare only pays and insurance only pays for the removal of these things, though, when there's actually some medical reason for removing them, that they're extremely irritated or they're bleeding or they're getting caught on your seatbelt or that kind of thing. So it's usually, you know, to try to find somebody who's willing to work with you on them and get rid of them. I use personally glycolic acid products, which help keep the ones on your, usually on your torso, a little smoother and keep them from proliferating and itching. So we have a product called Neostrata, but there's Eucerin Plus is another good product to use kind of every single day to try to keep them as flat as possible.
So, could you spell that for me, please?
Okay. Well, just the over-the-counter one is Eucerin, E-U-C-E-R-I-N Plus. And there's a lotion and a cream of that. And that's just over-the-counter. And that is a nice lactic acid product. There's actually another one which is called Amlactin, A-M-L-A-C-T-I-N, which is a profoundly good moisturizer. And it may, that's a 12% lactic acid that's over the counter. And that would be another great one to use on a super regular basis and just see if it doesn't help keep you smoother. Now, the downside of both of these is that they can make you a little bit more sun sensitive because lactic acid does that. So use your sunblock too.
Okay, are these for both skin tags and the rough spots or just the rough spots?
I would use them in the skin tag areas also just because the difference between a skin tag and a little what we call a filiform wart, which is actually caused by human papillomavirus, is kind of hard to tell clinically. And it may help to keep those from proliferating also.
Great. Thank you.
Good
Very
luck.
Good. Thank you. All right. To Champagne. This is the next person on the Champagne Line 2. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm calling because you were talking about inheriting things from our parents. I inherited this from my father. My fingers crack, and usually right next to where the end of the nail, like so that when I try to pick up things, it's very painful. And usually it happens in the winter when there's less humidity in the air, and then usually by this time of the year it's a little more humid and I'm doing okay. But this year it's still happening, and now something new is on the underside of my fingers, on the palm where the lines are, you know, like when the palm reader reads your skin, it's starting to crack there too. And I put moisturizer on. I put bandages with Neosporin at night when I go to bed. I can't seem to get any relief. It usually takes at least 2 to 3 weeks for these things to heal, and it's kind of like walking around with a paper cut. I have a hard time typing on the computer and things like that, and I'm wondering if you have any suggestions.
Yeah, this is really a miserable problem, and I see it, you know, at least twice a day. It may be a bit of psoriasis now that it's moving on to your palms. It may be partly a contact dermatitis. What kind of, do you have a business that you do?
No, I think it has more to do with I'm a gardener.
Okay, yeah.
And as much as I try to always wear gloves, I often don't.
Yeah.
I've recently found finally a pair of gloves that works, and so now I think after I get these healed, it will be all right. But so I'll end up working in the garden, and I know that dries out my hands.
Right. So I would say that another lady I was talking with this about, I would definitely either ask your PCP, you know, your general doc, for some form of a steroid ointment. Steroids being anti-red, anti-inflammatory, can help heal things up. You need to use that figure out if there's anything that you're getting in touch with. Excessive washing of hands is a huge issue here for many people. And then contacting different kind of chemicals, like if you clean in the house with, using Windex and 409 and different things.
It's probably more the washing the hands, because okay. I'm outside doing stuff, so I come in and wash my hands. And so,
right. Well, use a real mild cleanser. Like get some Cetaphil lotion cleanser for your hands. Try to not use a brush too much. And use over-the-counter hydrocortisone. Sometimes they actually do get infected, so the Neosporin can be helpful, these cracks. You know, so if something is open at the bottom and oozy, you probably want to use both hydrocortisone and some of the Neosporin. And then you want to put a big glurb of that on and then get some of those white cotton gloves that are called medical gloves, you know, not fancy ones for dusting or wearing to parties, but they're hand protective gloves that you can wear at night. Bag balm, some people think is wonderful. Plain Vaseline is great. Aquaphor is great to kind of moisturize your hands overall. So decreasing washing and being nice to these individual areas is great. And then there's a thing called second skin that you can get to put on the cracks themselves, or even super glue that you can glue them together with, and then they don't hurt while you're typing and that kind of stuff.
Feel it while I'm out, because I know when I go out, other stuff gets in. Is there any value? Is this helpful or harmful? Sometimes I'll put my moisturizer on my hands, and then I put like a latex glove on it to hold the moisture in.
Yeah,
is that bad?
I think that's terrible. Yeah, it's actually
okay.
Because you actually cannot help but sweat in that situation, and that really makes the situation worse. That's why I've stressed the white cotton gloves. Let's switch on over, and good luck.
Thank you so very much.
All right, very good. On again, this is Urbana Line number 3. Hello.
Yes?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Jacobson. I have an instrument-related question. I'm an esthetician. How do you feel about using metal extractors to remove comedones?
If they're nice and loose and the person is not allergic to nickel, I think it's a great idea.
Okay.
I have had a few people. It's basically, you know, to not do too much damage. And that's the problem. I see people all the time who are like can't quite see and who are plucking little hairs out from under their chins and plucking their skin every time they do it. And so you can see that people can do some damage. But, you know, mostly in removing a comedone, whether you're doing it manually or with a little instrument, the main thing to do is to get that little pointed plug out of the very bottom of the pore. Because if you kind of decapitate it halfway through, you're just, you know, actually causing the person more problem.
And great. So you don't have an objection to using a metal extractor if it's done properly?
I do not.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Right. Again, to Effingham for the next call. This is line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Yeah, my question is age spots. I will call it a light brown spot, smaller than a dime, that grows right in front of my sideburn. I wonder if there's any treatments for that.
There sure are treatments. How old are you about?
51.
51. The one thing about these age spots, light brown flat things, you kind of want somebody to look at it because you can, you know, freeze it with liquid nitrogen if you're sure clinically that it's absolutely nothing to be, you know, no problem at all. That's my favorite thing to do with them. Nothing over the counter works very well. But you also want to make sure that a light brown patch on a guy who only has one is not, in fact, something, you know, more dangerous. So I would get it looked at, and if whoever your clinician is feels like it's fine to go ahead and just freeze it, that would be my favorite thing to do with it, versus possibly taking just a little teeny piece for biopsy to verify that it's nothing.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much.
All right.
And wear your sunblock.
Thank you.
Yeah, and get a hat.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Here, we're seeing if we can get another caller lined up here. I do know that I thought you would maybe like to talk a little bit about vitamin D. You know, we've been talking so much about wear your sunscreen. But I know that people, I'm sure, have heard about this concern that people's vitamin, they're not getting enough vitamin D. And I guess mostly the way you do that is it has to do with something that happens in your skin as a result
of the sun exposure. Yes, right.
So if you're, so are we?
Okay. So in the, many of the studies, people who use a lot of sunblock and people who don't use a lot of sunblock have the same high or low vitamin D. So that doesn't make that much difference in most instances. And since I deal with skin cancer all day long and aging and people who somehow want to reverse their aging processes, you know, you can very easily supplement with 400 to 700 international units of vitamin D, get all the vitamin D you could possibly, you know, need for your system, or eat a bunch of sardines, or, you know, drink a lot of milk, or take, you know, the vitamin D with your calcium, if particularly if you're a woman, and a little magnesium to get good absorption of it, and avoid getting any sun in that you can avoid getting, because we know for certain that you get skin cancer from sun exposure, and we don't really know for certain that you get colon cancer from not enough vitamin D, or that you get breast cancer from not enough vitamin D, or whether you have enough vitamin D or not. Now, I have patients who are, you know, melanoma patients or patients with multiple skin cancers, and we check vitamin D levels all the time on people in order to determine whether they're low, because I, you know, I believe that a low vitamin D level is not a good thing for people to have. But the way that you do it is by taking a supplement. It's not by getting sun. Because the other thing you have to remember, if you say, oh, well, I'm only going to get 15 minutes of sun. But if you go out for 15 minutes and then you put on a sunblock that it takes half an hour for it to work, because the chemical sunblocks do, you know, you've been 45 minutes exposed then, and we know that that's enough to cause damage, ultraviolet damage to cells that cannot be repaired in any way, shape, or form. So take a supplement and never, ever go to a tanning bed, because tanning beds are just sun magnified and are totally associated with basal cell skin cancer, squamous cell skin cancer, which, whereas they don't kill you very often, can be very disfiguring and very difficult to treat with. And they're also associated with the melanoma skin cancer, which is the, you know, black or brown, often completely flat, irregular, brown or black lesion. So it doesn't have to be a bump to be a melanoma. Very important piece of information. A flat, irregular lesion, a flat irregular patch that's black or brown, any place on your body, needs to be evaluated immediately by somebody who can do a biopsy and determine whether it is in fact a melanoma or not. And those are also associated with tanning beds. And young women particularly are so susceptible to getting this terrible damage, which they carry with them through life, and it can come back to bite you in a very, very bad way.
Okay, very good. Well, let's see, we get one more call. Someone on the cell phone, line one. Hello.
Ah, hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. This will be quick, and I'll go ahead and listen after. I just was curious if you had any advice. About a year ago, I'm a mountain biker, and I took quite a spill, and on my shin, I abraded the entire distance from my knee down to my ankle, and then also gouged it right down to the bone. And it took about 120 days for it to finally heal up and all the scabs to come off. Since then, there's like a 3-inch wide scar and like the center gouge all the way down from knee to ankle. And it's essentially just like tissue paper thin. Like I can just bump it right and the skin will just come off in scrolls. And I was wondering if there's any thoughts that you might have on how to deal with that, and I'll just listen off here. And thank you very much for the show. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Well, you managed to, you know, wound yourself in probably the most unforgiving part of the body from a healing point of view. And if you went down to the bone, really all your body's ever going to be able to manufacture there is that very thin layer. It's very hard to get any of the subcutaneous tissue back. Now, one thing that can, in fact, help through time to toughen that skin as much as we can to have it be as healthy as possible is that same product, Amlactin, that I mentioned earlier, which is a 12% lactic acid lotion, which is over the counter. And that one actually thickens up your keratin layer a little bit as time, you know, and good use goes on. I guess I would probably, you know, use that on a daily basis, use your sunblock on a daily basis. You're always going to have, you know, pigment in that area because they never heal very well. And seriously think about when you're going to be, you know, doing anything, you know, wearing a shin guard in that area so you don't re-injure it and, you know, break down, because it's going to always be a dickens of a place to heal. And please be careful. And I'm glad you came out okay in general.
One more here. I have an email. We'll see if we can do this in about a minute and a half. Someone says, I've been diagnosed with rosacea and being treated with Oracea and Metrogel. Results were good at first, but have had quite a flare-up on one side of my face. Any thoughts?
Rosacea seems to be, you know, much worse in people in different hormonal times of their lives. Oracea is a lovely product. It's a 40 milligram doxycycline. I would say if you're really flaring, you might want to get up to 100 milligrams of doxycycline and then be really careful of sun exposure. I would maybe add in a product called Finacea or Axone, have your dermatologist use one of those to see if that will help. And the one-sidedness is a little bit tricky. I'd be careful with, you know, having my cell phone held up to it. I'd be careful. Oh, actually, with any fabric softener dryer sheets that you might be using. Pillowcases are the main thing that touch your face. If there's something in that that you've been, you know, maybe changed a product or using a dryer sheet that has a little bit of extra chemical, that could be a problem for you. Maybe try sleeping on the other side. It's a tough one. Sorry.
Okay. That's where we're going to have to finish up for this time around. Our thanks to Dr. Ellen Jacobson. Her clinic is in Urbana. She's a dermatologist. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here, and good luck with everything in your future, sir.
Thank you very much.
Okay.